You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
It's been a while, so let's dive right in. Hi everyone, Ahalya here, keeping you company on Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund. And of course, Srijit Balasubramanian joining me on today's episode as well, economist in the fixed income fund management team. Hi Srijit, thank you so much for being with us on today's podcast.
My pleasure, Ahalya. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I hear we've got a lot to catch up on. It has been actually a little bit of a gap since our last episode. And for everyone listening, we're going to be taking a macro approach on macroeconomics today as we touch upon many changes that have happened in the past month. It's been an interesting one with economic data and central bank meetings that have provided insights for markets into where the global economy is headed. And that's kind of the focus of our conversation today, right? We're going to be touching upon the US economy, the latest Fed, European Central Bank and Bank of England monetary policy meetings, as well as what's happening in Asia. So, you know, shining a light on Japan, China and India, because where we are, you know, recording this podcast from, the Union budget was presented to us last month. And let's just say it's been a hot topic of conversation. So Srijit, why don't we begin with the US of A, as always, you know, the Fed's monetary policy meeting where they kept policy rate unchanged, but signaled rate cuts are around the corner. So what is exactly the economic situation now, and has that changed? You were telling me right before we started recording that there've been changes on a daily basis, so interested to hear.
So we've previously discussed about how economic data in the US surprised to the upside in the first quarter of this year, unfortunately right after the Fed pivoted towards rate cuts in December. So the markets and the Fed had to dial down its rate cut expectations. Then from May, we started getting some data which was weaker, or at least not above consensus expectation. In the last month, that sort of gathered a bit more steam. So we had softer data on inflation, retail sales, consumer sentiment, and PMIs. In the labor market, unemployment rate and insurance claims moved up, while wage growth moderated. But payroll additions were actually quite strong. But the July numbers that just came out on the 2nd of August showed payroll additions and wage growth were well below consensus, and that too quite broadly, while unemployment rate was higher than expected. So even growth in the unit labor cost, so that is the labor cost to produce one unit of output, was almost half of market expectation recently. So the labor markets have really cooled down, and labor supply has also been improving. Therefore, growth in the US is now not just directionally and more broadly east, but it points to clear weakness. And this includes the July labor market data, the employment component of ISM, which came out recently, the unit labor cost number that we just mentioned, and even, you know, credit card and auto loan delinquencies, the Fed's beige book, where, which actually mentions about how consumers are pushing back on further price rises and moderating discretionary consumption. And also the clear narrative from the latest quarterly results of companies, particularly in the consumption sector. So that's on the data. So the Fed last week said, you know, the first rate cut could be at its next meeting in September. It acknowledged the recent progress in inflation and labor market data. In fact, it said the recent progress in inflation is even better than last year, given broader disinflation, including that in services this time, you know, versus mainly just in goods last year. The meeting statement also this time was updated to clearly mention the renewed focus of the Fed on both the goals of inflation and employment. Versus, you know, more weight on just inflation previously. So there's been a clear tilt towards the Fed responding to strong labor market weakness. And this could be more than reinforced by the latest labor market data. The market was pricing in around 3.5 25 basis points cut, rate cuts this year before the July payroll data came out on 2nd of August. But now, I mean, as of today, as on the 5th of August, it is pricing in almost 5. Including a 50 basis rate cut. So that's a fast change over a weekend. And overall, US data, particularly labor market, so has showed clear signs of weakness. And you know, further downside surprises here can accelerate growth worries, sentiment, and increase rate cut expectations even more.
Well, you know, amongst many of the things that the US economy is doing right now, it's also keeping us on our toes, right, Srijit? So I think there is Yeah, there's a lot to look out for. And it's interesting because I think in our last podcast, we did speak about how stronger U.S. data in the first quarter has given way to softer data. Now the perception is weaker data. And I think that's naturally bringing about some growth worries. So it will be interesting to see how it moves from here. And we will be exploring this in our future conversations to see how the Fed and the markets adjust their interest rate expectations. Now, in our previous episode, we also discussed the rationale behind the rate cuts in Canada, Switzerland, Sweden, and particularly the first cut by the European Central Bank in June. You did also mention the Bank of England is moving closer to a cut. So to shift the spotlight now onto Europe, England, what is the situation there? And could you talk to us a little bit about that macroeconomic status?
Yeah, the ECB cut its policy rate by 25 basis points in June, which was for the first time in the cycle as underlying inflation has eased and is expected to ease further. Now, we have discussed previously about lower growth in Europe being a major difference versus the US, and therefore services inflation in the Europe being lower. But it's still high compared to, you know, the euro area's historical data. The ECB also projects headline and core inflation to stay above its 2% target well into next year. So inflation is moderated, but it is still elevated. And so they're not pre-committing to any pace or magnitude of rate cuts. Domestic price pressures are still high because, you know, labor market is just moderating and services prices are high. And wages are still rising at a high rate due to catch-up of lost purchasing power. Productivity is weak. And therefore, you know, unit labor cost growth is also higher. The good part is the impact of high wage growth has been sort of offset by profits, which contracted in the first quarter. And both wage growth and profits are also expected to moderate by the ECB. So as expected, the ECB kept rates on hold in July. The Bank of England held its policy rate in June when, you know, although headline inflation had started to fall faster because, again, services inflation was still 5% plus and they needed more evidence of moderating wage growth and declining inflation persistence, they decided to be on hold. On the 1st of August, the latest meeting, it cut rates by 25 basis points. Again, headline inflation was at the 2% target in May and June. I think private sector wage growth and services inflation there have been moderating too. The OE also expects wage and GDP growth to moderate even further and inflation persistence to fade over the next few years. But it's still attentive to risks of high inflation. Therefore, the BOE is also not pre-committing to any rate cut path and wanting to keep policy restrictive for sufficiently long, just like the ECB. And that's what their narrative is at the moment.
Okay, so again, a very interesting sort of situation developing there, although disinflation has progressed and there are risks to growth. You know, the price pressures are still quite elevated when you compare them to historical standards. So I guess it makes sense that the interest rate cuts have commenced, but both the ECB and the Bank of England are not really committing to any specific path to combat this. What is the situation looking like in Asia though, Srijit? And you know, how are the Asian economies responding to their own domestic economic situations as well as the likely rate cut path by advanced economy central banks like the Fed and the ECB?
Okay, so first on Japan, before getting to the emerging markets in Asia. We know Japan has been an exception among advanced economies. You know, as the Bank of Japan exited negative interest rates and yield curve control policies earlier this year. So it has been tightening policy as inflation and wages were finally rising after many years, while the other advanced economies are either easing or, you know, are close to it. Despite this, markets perceived policy outcomes as dovish and the Japanese yen depreciated, you know, quite a bit earlier. But at the end July meeting of the BOJ, it hiked rates from the 0 to 0.1% range previously to 0.25% and also unveiled its plan to reduce monthly outright government bond purchases to 3 trillion yen by the first quarter of 2026.
Okay.
And quite importantly, it also said it will continue to raise the policy rate and adjust the degree of monetary accommodation if growth and inflation turn out to be as expected. Now, this was seen as hawkish. But the other point is also that U.S. growth worries and rate cut expectations, like we just discussed, have now risen very strongly, particularly in the last few days. So this narrows the interest rate spread with the U.S. quite a bit for Japan, you know, reduces the carry trade opportunities. And so the yen has really appreciated quite strongly.
Okay.
The Japanese stock market is also down as we speak. The central bank, though, is quite upbeat about broader wage growth and inflation ahead. But economic activity, we see it right now, and even private consumption is not are not very robust.
Right.
So a rapid change for Japan and global markets, in fact, in the last week, you know, in the last few days, in fact, and it's a very interesting phase ahead.
Okay, and is China kind of reflecting this, or is it a totally different situation there?
So China, the situation is a little different. In China, the property sector and private consumption slowdown continue. Data has been benign, and June CPI, the consumer price index inflation, was just 0.2% year on year. And we know geopolitical pressures and risks are also there. Of late, but policy has been in the spotlight for China. Now, state-owned enterprises were allowed to buy unsold housing to tackle the property slowdown. And in early July, the central bank spoke about its plan to borrow long-dated bonds and sell them into the market to meet demand and create a floor, importantly, for long yields, long bond yields. Now, the central bank also cut its one-year loan prime rate, which is widely used as a benchmark for corporate lending, by 10 basis points. And this was the first such cut in almost a year. Mm-hmm. Similarly, it also cut the five-year equivalent, which influences mortgage pricing. So that was cut by, again, 10 basis points. And this was like the first time since February. So these cuts also came after it had reduced the seven-day reverse repo rate, you know, by around 10 basis points. So there's been these rate cuts that have been happening. And importantly, there was the third plenum, which is the party meeting, which lays out policy direction typically. Now, it showed concern about economic recovery and called for proactive stimulus to create more equitable growth among regions and sectors and tackle weak demand. There was also the Politburo meeting, which again continued to acknowledge the growth challenges that China is facing and the need to deploy counter-cyclical measures to boost consumption. So overall, policy, you know, if you see, has to keep currency stable, and it has to also to balance the short-term rate cuts that it has been doing with creating a floor on long-term yields, which is its stated intent. And therefore, there have been more responses and show of intent from policy, but we are yet to see anything which is sizable or, you know, directly addresses the demand problem. Therefore, Chinese bond yields have fallen quite a bit due to weak growth and the expectation of even you know, lower rates to tackle it. So that's where China is.
Okay, so we've covered China, Japan. You know, one last question before we head into the summary of today's podcast, Srijit. But, you know, let's bring it home, I guess. Is India looking like it's facing any kind of challenge, given that the market is coming around to, you know, accepting the Bank of Japan's action? And what it plans to do. China seems like it's in a bit of a challenging position to get their economy back up. It's something we've been talking about, you know, on the podcasts that have gone by as well. So where does India stand in all of this?
Yeah, so for India, data on growth, you know, like GDP, PMIs, GST, all of them have been quite buoyant. Although we know private consumption has been generally weaker. Recent data like the core sector output growth also moderated. Now, on inflation, core inflation has remained very benign and was only 3.1% in May and June. But headline inflation picked up in June as momentum in food prices. And I think we've spoken about this before, because momentum in vegetable prices particularly picked up. Now, this continued for most of July, but food prices have just started to broadly sort of moderate more recently, be, you know, cereals, pulses, etc. But that is a very recent phenomenon in the last few days. So in July, we have a favorable base effect, which should take headline CPI, you know, most likely below 4%. But that should wane. The base effect should wane in the next 2 months. The trajectory of food prices and even rural consumption will also depend on the monsoon rainfall, so which was in deficit in June, but as we know, has picked up strongly in July. Although the spatial and temporal distribution has been a bit off. Despite this, if you see, the kharif season crop sowing has been progressing quite well. With the weather phenomenon of La Nina likely developing at the end of this month, we could see good rainfall in the second half of the season too, like the IMD has forecasted recently. And we could also therefore have good reservoir levels for the following Rabi crop sowing season. So hopefully we also don't see much damage but to the standing kharif crops and, you know, perishables from episodes of excess rainfall, because that is also important. So that's where we are on inflation and monsoon. But the other interesting data is on bank credit growth, which had picked up and, you know, widened the credit deposit ratio. The gap is still quite wide. It has not, you know, materially narrowed or anything, but credit growth was a bit lower at 14% in mid-July, just mildly. So still very early days there. The other important thing is on fiscal. The most important takeaway from last month's union budget for us has been, you know, policy continuity and the commitment to macroeconomic stability and fiscal prudence. fiscal deficit after 5.6% of GDP in FY24 is now pegged at 4.9% in FY25, the running financial year. Also, the target of below 4.5% in financial year 2026 has been retained. So the FY25 budget estimates also look quite realistic if you see the numbers, as the excess RBI dividends were utilized almost equally for additional expenditure and reducing the fiscal deficit. The focus on CapEx, capital expenditure also continues. So a structurally bullish view on India is intact. On monetary policy, we have the RBI MPC meeting shortly, later this week. In the June meeting, the policy rate and stance were left unchanged with a 4-2 majority, citing robust growth and food inflation risks. The governor also mentioned policies primarily guided by domestic growth inflation dynamics and not the US Fed's policy. So let's hope food inflation stabilizes. But in the current situation, what's been happening in the last few days, we'll also have to see how global data, central banks and markets move from here.
Right. So I guess it could be coined a good budget for India in terms of macro stability, relatively so. You know, like I mentioned, a very hot topic of conversation these days because there are so many different sides to that economic story there. But Srijit, you know, to leave our listeners with three key takeaways from today's discussion, everyone tune in closely to this summary now, but of course, listen to the podcast for more in-depth details. The first, looking at the US, you know, softer data from May seems to have given way to weaker data. More so after the July payroll, and so growth worries naturally have risen. The Fed said the first interest rate cut could be at its next meeting in September, but weaker data has increased markets' expectations on the magnitude and pace of cuts. A US rate cut is therefore just around the corner, and we will of course be discussing that when it does come up on our podcasts later on. Now to move on to Europe and England, other advanced economy central banks have already started to cut, with the latest being the Bank of England. The ECB and the BOE acknowledged the progress on disinflation and expected further moderation too, but pockets of higher inflation and risks like services remain, so they don't want to pre-commit to a specific path of rate cuts. Japan, of course, is an exception and they continue to tighten policy. But given the US growth worries and rate cut expectations picked up suddenly, the Japanese yen appreciated strongly in the last few days and the stock market is also down. And finally, moving to China's property sector and consumer demand slowdown continues. Although policy responses and statements of intent have risen recently, anything big bang or addressing demand is still missing. When it comes to emerging markets, India seems to be in a relatively better spot in comparison. You know, we did speak about growth, inflation, rural, monsoon, and so on. But the union budget last month confirmed the fiscal focus on policy continuity and macro stability by reducing this year's deficit and sticking to the glide path for next year. Those were some key takeaways from our conversation today. And Srijit, thank you very much for joining us. I think it's been quite an interesting conversation. We find ourselves at some pivotal moments, I guess, in the macroeconomic landscape.
Yeah, very important and interesting phase for global markets in terms of what's happening in the US and Japan particularly. Yeah, so interesting times.
Absolutely. And we'll continue to unpack these interesting times in our podcast to come. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Let's Talk Macro. We'll catch you very soon with another conversation on the macroeconomic landscape. But for now, stay safe and stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.